Not too long ago, I was talking to a brother-in-law about dangerous things we'd done on our jobs. And he's worked as an electrician, and he started telling me about something that always bothered him, and climbing power poles, because occasionally he'd have to climb up a power pole. And he said, you know, it's bad enough digging your spikes in, climbing up the pole. But he said, the really bad part of this was when you get to the top and you're wearing your harness and you've got this leather belt around the pole. He said, the really hard thing is that leather belt. He says, you know in your mind that it could hold up, probably pick up a car with that thing. But he says, it took all of his courage to lean back in the belt and let go of the pole. Because he said, he knew that if the belt didn't hold, he was going over backwards onto his head. And he said, however many times he did this, it took everything he had to let go of the pole and lean back into the belt. And, you know, it's really difficult to have confidence in something that's really trustworthy when there's a lot at stake, when the chips are really on the table. And you know that something's a sure thing, it's still really difficult to trust it. You know, last week, we were talking about how God was preparing slaves to become a conquering army and how He was putting them through basic training. And He began the basic training with the thing He wanted, the highest priority, the thing He didn't want them ever to forget, and that was the security of their relationship with Him. Confidence. He wanted to build confidence in their relationship with Him. Today we're going to look at the second area of basic training that God puts them through to transform them into that conquering army. And we're going to the 16th chapter of the book of Exodus. They set out from Elim, and all the congregation of the people of Israel came to the wilderness of Sin, which is between Elim and Sinai, on the 15th day of the second month after they had departed from the land of Egypt. And the whole congregation of the people of Israel murmured against Moses and Aaron in the wilderness and said to them, would that we had died by the hand of the Lord in the land of Egypt, when we sat by the flesh pots and ate bread to the full. For you have brought us out into this wilderness to kill this whole assembly with hunger. Now, I need to give you a little bit of background here. What's happened up to this point is that Moses has come to Egypt, and they've had all these plagues. Last time we read about the Passover, where God came through with the angel of death and killed all the firstborn of Egypt, and they have fled. And they fled out into the desert, and Pharaoh changed his mind and pursued them and caught up to them at the Red Sea, where they crossed on dry land, and they were pursued into the sea by Pharaoh's army, which was destroyed when the water came back upon them. And since that time, we've gone out into the desert and run out of water, been given water, and now we're farther in the desert. And this is 2 months have passed, and they're out of food. And, you know, they've come to a point of crisis, and they're no longer in control of their situation at all, because they can't go back to Egypt. It's too far. They've walked for 2 months, so it's a 2 month journey back. Plus, there's the Red Sea in the way. So they're not going to make it back to where they can get food. And they're in the desert, so they're not in a place where they can go find food. They can't grow it. There's nobody else there for them to take it away from. They're really in a big crisis. And they're kind of at the point where they're asking the question, well, what do you do when you're out of options and the consequences are severe? You know, military training is basically about life and death issues. And basic spiritual training is about serious critical issues too, even life and death ones. You know, how you answer this question, what do you do when you're out of options and the consequences are serious? How you answer this question is important to God, and it's important to your spiritual life too. So let's look and see how they responded. In verse 2, the whole congregation of the people of Israel murmured against Moses and Aaron in the wilderness. So they started complaining. That does them a lot of good. And it says, "Would that we had died by the hand of the Lord in Egypt when we sat by the flesh pots and ate bread to the full." They sort of forgot that they were slaves, and nobody feeds slaves till they're full or gives them great things to eat. But that's how they're remembering it. They're remembering a terrible situation fondly. And finally they said, "For you have brought us out into this wilderness to kill this whole assembly with hunger." So, you know, they're starting to place blame. You know, none of these things accomplishes anything. It doesn't even make them feel better. And, you know, it's actually probably cause for a fight, you know, with Moses and Aaron. One important thing to remember about this situation is this didn't happen by accident. From the moment they left Egypt, God led them. He led them with a pillar of cloud by day and a pillar of fire by night. And when the cloud would move, everyone would go with it. And when it would stop, they would stop. So God is leading them, and He's led them out into the wilderness to be out of food. This is not by accident. Now, their response wasn't the one that God desired, but it's obviously the one He expected. And interestingly to me, there are no consequences for them complaining, finding fault, or all these things they're doing. God does not punish them for any of this, because He remembers, you know, where He sees them where they're at, and His goal is to bring them to a higher place. But we get to God's response in verse 4. "Then the Lord says to Moses, 'Behold, I will rain bread from heaven for you, and the people shall go out and gather a day's portion every day so that I may prove them whether they will walk in my law or not.'" So God supplies their needs. And the first thing to see about that supply is that it is miraculous. I mean, bread does not rain from heaven, but God causes it to rain from heaven. And God's supply is not only miraculous, it's sufficient. And later on in the chapter, when it's talking about the bread that comes from heaven, this, they come to call it manna, it says this in verses 16 to 18. "And this is what the Lord has commanded: gather of it every man of you as much as he can eat." As much as he can eat. "You shall take an omer apiece according to the number of persons whom each of you has in his tent." And the people of Israel did so. They gathered some more, some less. But when they measured it with an omer, he that gathered much had nothing over, and he that gathered little had no lack. And each gathered according to what he could eat. So, you know, they were saying that when they were in Egypt, they ate till they were full. Well, you know, nobody feeds their slaves till they're full. But here in the wilderness, when God rains bread from heaven, He feeds them till they're full. And it's sufficient. And finally, it's reliable, because He says, "Gather a day's portion every day." And for 40 years, it comes every day as much as they can eat. So the final thing is here that God gives His reason for all of this, why He led them into the wilderness, why He brought them to this point of crisis where they are out of options and in desperate need. And this is His reason: "So that I can prove them whether they will walk in my law or not." This is about obedience. Now, obedience can be coerced and it can be gained through fear, but God isn't about coercion or fear. He wants to get their obedience through confidence in Him. He's trying to build their confidence in Him and gain their obedience through that. One of the goals of basic training in the military is about obedience. And if you're in a combat unit, it's only effective if everybody obeys their commands. And, you know, if you're in a combat unit, you may be given the command to stand and fight regardless of the cost to hold your position. Or you may be given the command to charge into the face of an enemy that's well defended. In other words, you may be commanded to do things that may cost you your life. And if just a few fail to obey the command, it may result in defeat and death for everyone. So it's extremely important in military training that people learn to obey commands even if it costs them their lives. And one of the reasons why basic training is so brutal and tough is that this kind of obedience is not learned except in extreme situations. And so it's tough on purpose so that people will learn to obey when it gets tougher. And God's training camp is no different. He brings us on purpose to a point of crisis so that we will learn to obey when the situation's tough. You know, I think it's kind of a paradox of Christian life that we learn to trust God for to save us from hell, to take us to heaven, but it's extremely hard for us to trust Him for the daily things of life. You know, when things get tough, it's really hard to trust God. And many statistical studies have shown that American Christians are just as sinful as unbelievers, and possibly even worse. And I think it's due to our failure to trust God and obey Him from that point of confidence in our God. Well, ultimately, everyone who believes in Jesus for salvation is going to find themselves in God's basic training, and they're going to find themselves in a place of desperation, and this will be by God's design. And you, when this time comes, you must hold on and wait for God. And in the case of Israel, in verses 9 to 12, this is what their experience was. And Moses said to Aaron, "Say to the whole congregation of the people of Israel, come near before the Lord, for He has heard your murmurings." And as Aaron spoke to the whole congregation of the people of Israel, they looked toward the wilderness, and behold, the glory of the Lord appeared in the cloud. And the Lord said to Moses, "I have heard the murmurings of the people of Israel. Say to them, at twilight you will eat flesh, and in the morning you will be filled with bread. Then you shall know that I am the Lord your God." If we can hold on and put our trust in Him and obey and wait for Him to provide our needs, it's going to be just like it was for them. Food in the evening, food in the morning. We'll see the glory of God. And we'll know who He is. I want to read to you an account of a young man's experience in this area of God's basic training. He's a man of God. His name is J. Hudson Taylor. He's one of the first missionaries to China, about 1800. And this is a biography, and in it he gives an account of his experience in this area of basic training. So this will go a little while, but I hope you're patient because this really impressed me, and I think it'll impress you too. So he writes, "To me it was a very grave matter," he wrote that winter, "to contemplate going out to China, far from all human aid, there to depend upon the living God alone for protection, supplies, and help of every kind. I felt that one's spiritual muscles required strengthening for such an undertaking. There was no doubt that if faith did not fail, God would not fail. But what if one's faith should not prove sufficient? I had not at that time learned that even if we believe not, yet he abideth faithful, for he cannot deny himself." He's quoting the Bible that, you know, God is faithful even when we're not. "It was consequently a very serious question to my mind, not whether he was faithful, but whether I had strong enough faith to warrant my embarking in the enterprise set before me. When I get out to China, I thought to myself, I shall have no claim on anyone for anything. My only claim will be on God. How important, then, to learn before leaving England to move man through God by prayer alone. At Hull, my kind employer, always busy, wished me to remind him whenever my salary became due. This I determined not to do directly, but to ask that God would bring the fact to his recollection, and thus encourage me by answering prayer. One time, as the day drew near for the payment of a quarter salary, I was as much as usual, much in prayer about it. The time arrived, but Dr. Hardy made no allusion to the matter. I continued praying. Days passed on, and he did not remember, until at length, on settling up my weekly accounts one Saturday night, I found myself possessed of only one remaining coin, a half crown piece. Still, I had hitherto known no lack, and I continued praying. That Sunday was a very happy one. As usual, my heart was full and brimming over with blessing. After attending divine service in the morning, my afternoon and evenings were taken up with gospel work in the various lodging houses I was accustomed to visit in the lowest part of town. At such times, it almost seemed to me as if heaven were begun below, and that all could be looked for was an enlargement of one's capacity for joy, not a truer feeling than I possessed. After concluding my last service about 10 o'clock that night, a poor man asked me to come and pray with his wife, saying that she was dying. I readily agreed, and on the way to his house, asked him why he had not sent for the priest, as his accent told me he was an Irishman. He had done so, he said, but the priest refused to come without a payment of 18 pence, which the man did not possess, as the family was starving. Immediately, it occurred to my mind that all the money I had in the world was the solitary half-crown, and that it was in one coin. Moreover, that while the basin of water gruel I usually took for supper was awaiting me, and there was sufficient in the house for breakfast in the morning, I certainly had nothing for dinner on the coming day. Somehow or other, there was at once a stoppage in the flow of joy in my heart. But instead of reproving myself, I began to reprove the poor man, telling him that it was very wrong to have allowed matters to get into such a state as he described, and that he ought to have applied to the relieving officer. His answer was that he had done so and was told to come at 11 o'clock the next morning, but that he feared that his wife might not live through the night. Ah, thought I, if only I had 2 shillings and 6 pence instead of this half crown, how gladly I would give these poor people a shilling. But to part with the half crown was far from my thoughts. I little dreamed that the truth of the matter simply was, and he gets to the crux of the matter here, was that I could trust God plus 1 and 6 pence, but was not prepared to trust him only without any money at all in my pocket. My conductor led me into a court, down which I followed him with some degree of nervousness. I had found myself there before, and at my last visit had been roughly handled. My tracts had been torn to pieces, and such a warning given me not to come again that I felt more than a little concerned. Still, it was the path of duty, and I followed on, up a miserable flight of stairs into a wretched room he led me, and oh, what a sight there presented itself. 4 or 5 children stood about, their sunken cheeks and temples, all telling unmistakably the story of slow starvation, and lying on a wretched pallet was a poor, exhausted mother with a tiny infant, 36 hours old, moaning rather than crying at her side, for it too seemed spent and failing. Ah, thought I, if I had 2 shillings and 6 pence instead of 1/2 crown, how gladly they should have 1 and 6 pence of it. But still a wretched unbelief prevented me from obeying the impulse to relieve their distress at the cost of all I possessed. It will scarcely seem strange that I was unable to say much to comfort these poor people. I needed comfort myself. I needed to tell them, however, that they must not be cast down, or I began to tell them that they must not be cast down, that though their circumstances were very distressing and that there was a kind and loving Father in heaven, but something within me cried, "You hypocrite, telling these unconverted people about a kind and loving Father in heaven and not prepared to trust him without 1/2 crown. I was nearly choked. How gladly I would have compromised with conscience. If I had 1 florin and 6 pence, I would have given the florin thankfully and kept the rest, but I was not yet prepared to trust in God alone without the 6 pence. To talk was impossible under these circumstances, yet strange to say, I thought I should have no difficulty in praying. Prayer was a delightful occupation in those days. Time thus spent never seemed wearisome, and I knew no lack of words. I seemed to think that all I should have to do would be to kneel down and pray, and that relief would come to them and to myself together. You asked me to come and pray with your wife, I said to the man. Let us pray, and I knelt down. But no sooner had I opened my lips with Our Father, which art in heaven, than conscience said within, Dare you mock God? Dare you kneel down and call him Father with that 1/2 crown in your pocket? Such a time of conflict then came upon me as I have never experienced before or since. How I got through that form of prayer, I know not, and whether the words uttered were connected or disconnected, I cannot tell. But I arose from my knees in great distress of mind. The poor father turned to me and said, You see what a terrible state we are in, sir. If you can help us, for God's sake, do. At that moment, the word flashed into my mind, Give to him that asketh thee. And in the word of a king there is power. I put my hand into my pocket and slowly drawing out the 1/2 crown, gave it to the man, telling him that it might seem a small matter for me to relieve them, seeing that I was comparatively well off, but that in parting with that coin I was giving them my all. What I had been trying to tell them was indeed true. God really was a father and might be trusted. The joy all came back in full flood tide to my heart. I could say anything and feel it then, and the hindrance to blessing was gone. Gone, I trust, forever. Not only was the poor woman's life saved, but my life, as I fully realized, had been saved too. It might have been a wreck, would have been probably, as a Christian life, had not grace at that time conquered and the striving of God's Spirit been obeyed. I well remember how that night, as I went home to my lodgings, my heart was as light as my pocket. The dark, deserted streets resounded with a hymn of praise that I could not restrain. Then I took my basin of gruel before retiring. I would not have exchanged it for a prince's feast. I reminded the Lord as I knelt at my bedside of his own word, He that giveth to the poor lendeth to the Lord. And I asked him not to let my loan be a long one, or I should have no dinner the next day. And with peace within and peace without, I spent a happy, restful night. Next morning for breakfast, my plate of porridge remained, and before it was finished, the postman's knock was heard at the door. I was not in the habit of receiving letters on Monday, as my parents and most of my friends refrained from posting on Saturday, so that I was somewhat surprised when the landlady came in holding a letter or packet in her wet hand covered by her apron. I looked at that letter, but could not make out the handwriting. It was either a strange hand or a feigned one, and the postmark was blurred. Where it came from, I could not tell. On opening the envelope, I found nothing written within, but inside a sheet of blank paper was folded a pair of kid gloves, from which, as I opened them in astonishment, 1/2 sovereign fell to the ground. Praise the Lord, I exclaimed, 400% for 12 hours investment. That is good interest. How glad the merchants of Hull would be if they could lend their money at such a rate. Then and there I determined that a bank that could not break should have my savings or earnings, as the case may be, a determination I have not yet learned to regret. I cannot tell you how often my mind has recurred to this incident, or all the help it has been to me in circumstances of difficulty in afterlife, if we are faithful to God in little things, we shall gain experience and strength that will be helpful to us in the more serious trials of life. And this story actually goes on, and he finds himself in the same state a couple of weeks later, and God supplies yet again in a miraculous way. And the thing that impressed me about this story is that it's so much like the one here in Exodus, where they turned to see the cloud and God's glory was shining there, and their needs were met, and they came away knowing who God was. And just, you know, Hudson Taylor in his way, he saw God's glory, his needs were met, and he also discovered more about his God. And, you know, Hudson Taylor learned to trust God and was greatly used by God. You know, and this area of basic training, learning to trust God, is a very difficult one. You know, if you keep reading on in Exodus, you'll find that Israel didn't learn their lesson, and they faced some more extreme circumstances because they didn't learn the lesson. In fact, this continued on for 40 more years. But finally they did learn, and they became a conquering army. And in my personal experience, this has been a very hard lesson for me to learn too, and it's involved some failures and some successes. And I think in a way this is a lot like my brother-in-law up on the power pole with his belt around, and he's hanging on, and it's, you know, time to let go of the pole and lean back, and you know that the belt is good. You know, we know that God can supply. But, you know, when it's a crisis, when the circumstances, when the consequences are serious, it's really difficult to trust God. And if we fail to trust Him, I think God will just keep us wandering in the wilderness till we do. But if we do learn to trust God, we will become that conquering army that He's training us to be. And in summary, God's training goals to this point are learning to have confidence in our relationship with Him, and then learning to have confidence in God Himself.